Welcome, dear souls, to the Way of the Yogi discussion group. It is Sunday, March 27th, 2011. I'm Zanna Harris.
And I'm Deborah Barclay.
And together we produce this podcast as an act of devotion to the practice and philosophies of yoga and as an act of service to the yoga community. So today with us we have Suzanne once again.
Hello.
And we also have our friend Percy with us.
Hello.
Would you guys like to share something about yourselves briefly?
Don't have a whole lot. I just am studying and practicing the culture in a Western way, like those of us in the West do, and want to keep learning and expanding. And so I attend with that in mind, and to see how I feel about being with you in this way.
I am always joyous to be here with the rest of you and all that are listening, and it is a journey that we will all take together.
Thank you. Awesome. So before we start, Deborah has some announcements about events and opportunities for service in and around our community. Deborah?
Thanks, Anna. We do have quite a few things happening in the next week or so. The first one I wanted to mention is happening on April 2nd at Eight Limbs Yoga. And that's an intro to meditation weekend intensive. And that's Saturday, April 2nd from 10 to 1 and Sunday, April 3rd from 10 to 12. That one is $70 for intensive through May 28th, which is tomorrow, and then $80 after. The next one is a kirtan with David Stringer.
Ooh, that should be good.
And that's at Shakti West, and that's Saturday, April 9th. From 7:30 to 9:30 p.m., and that's $20, and that is at Shakti Vinyasa Yoga West, which is on 2238 Northwest Market Street in Ballard.
Really nice space. I've been there.
The next one is Song of the Soul Concert, which is a kirtan concert. I thought that was pretty interesting. So there are live performers. Tina Malia and Guru Ganesha are creating a sacred space for all to chant and sing and let the song of the soul shine forth. And that's on April 22nd from 7:30 to 10 p.m. And that's at the Rainier Valley Cultural Center. And you can find out more about that at spiritvoyage.com. The next thing I wanted to mention was two classes at Whole Life Yoga, which is in Greenwood. There's a free introductory yoga class on Sunday, April 10th from 4:15 to 5:30.
That's the right price.
Right, free. Yes, appropriate for all levels, and beginners are welcome. And they also do a yoga nidra, and that is at 8 to 9:15 p.m. on April 1st. That's $15. And for those of you who don't know, yoga nidra is an ancient practice of meditation that can lead to inner freedom. It employs several practices which work at the physical, energetic, mental, and emotional levels, allowing us to reconnect with our deepest self. So nidra means sleep.
Yes.
So it's almost like a laying down meditation, guided meditation. The other thing that I wanted to mention was there's a yoga for kids, which I thought was cute, age 3 to 6, and you can find out
awesome.
More. Yeah. yoga-mama.com is the website, and it's Tuesdays from 4:15 to 5 p.m., April 5th through May 24th. It's an 8-week session. It's $104, and it is a drop-off program, so moms get to get 45 minutes of freedom there.
Seriously. That surprises
That's
me.
That's great.
Yeah. Then we also have the Lucille Bhakti House Kirtan, which is every Wednesday from 7:30 to 10 p.m. That you can find out more information at paulmillage.com. That's paulmillage.com. There's also something that Paul is doing, Acro Yoga Workshop at Yoga Bliss, which is also mentioned on the website. That's April 16th from 1:30 to 4:30 p.m. Yeah, and the last thing we've got, there's a lot going on. This, I think spring is really getting people into the motion.
And activities.
We're all ready.
Jennifer Sundstrom does edible plant ID walks, and there's one coming up on April 10th from 11 to 12:30. And if you're interested in that, we recommend that you check out her website at seattleherbalist.com or give her a call at 206-396-6858.
And she has a lot of different types of workshops. She's an herbalist, so it looked really interesting on her website.
Cool.
I looked it up. Yeah.
Look at that.
Yeah.
So it is spring here in the Pacific Northwest.
Woo!
Yes.
Yay.
And with it, the rains are here. Not the rain here is unusual. But this is a different kind of rain. The kind that brings with it the feeling of nourishment for the new and vibrant signs of life emerging all around us. It has deepened my sense of appreciation for the work that we are doing here together. I see in the world around us an analogy of our own inner processes. The seeds of insight we are planting, the knowledge with which we fertilize and water them, and the fruits of freedom we hope someday to bring home as harvest after much hard work of cultivation through study and practice. Mm. So with that said, let's settle into our bodies and let go of all the distractions of our day. Allow the incessant chattering of the mind to fade into the background and become quiet. Let's make ourselves fully available to the moment, to each other, and to this experience that we share. So, in the last meeting, we introduced Sutras 5 and 6. But before we get into that, I kind of want to recap a little bit on what we've learned so far through this journey in the Yoga Sutras. We started off very simply. The Yoga Sutras just very simply stated that this, now we come to the practice of yoga, the actual practice of yoga, of learning what it is to have that union of body, mind, heart, soul, intelligence.
Yeah, the union of it all.
So does anybody have any, does anybody want to go anywhere with us?
With that, with just the...
What we've learned so far, what we've... leading up to now.
I was, you know, sitting at home thinking and stressing about something, and I got to thinking about something that we had talked about in my little book, The Yoga Sutras of Patanjali, translated by Alistair Shearer. Number 2 says, yoga is the settling of the mind into silence. And I kept going, you know, that's what I'm trying to do, but I can't do it by just saying, mind, be silent. So it was very helpful for me to think back on some of the things that we have been talking about, and that you don't have to sit there and be silent. You can inwardly focus on your breath. I guess that would be outwardly focused, I don't know. And just think about the journey that we're on. It's the journey, it's not this moment, it's, I don't know, I'm not saying it very well, but it was very calming for me to think about it as being a series of moments that we put together.
Beautiful.
That it's not, oh, I have to do it right this moment. It's like, no, just breathe.
That's gorgeous, yeah.
Yeah,
I know, anger really stresses that that life is only, it only races by so fast because of our perception of time as a linear thing, as when we put moments into motion. It's when we find the stillness within each moment that we can slow that process down and actually become eternal within each moment.
Yeah, that's kind of, you know, exactly. It's like, oh, okay, just, huh. The moment, and not worry about before, after, hurry up somewhere, oh what's happened, and appreciate that.
Yes.
And this is actually going to come up later on, this entire concept, so this is really something to really keep in mind, So this is good.
Foreshadowing.
You are foreshadowing. I love it. Yeah, so it's instilling those fluctuations of the mind. It's so important to be able to recognize when we're getting caught up.
When things are hard, when things are, difficult, and it's nice sitting here with people that, you're of like mind and so forth, and we're all, oh, okay. But when you're out in real life and, you're being tugged this way or pulled that way or things are crashing in on you, it's comforting to have a place to go and know that it is not just safe, but that it is restorative.
And always available.
Yeah. And always available.
And always with us. I mean, it's that place within. And that's such a revelation to so many people,
It's a comfort.
That we have that at all times that are at our immediate, within reach.
Yeah.
It's there. We don't even have to reach out, we just reach in.
Exactly.
Basically.
Exactly.
Yeah. So
I was thinking, as Suzanne was saying, just being home and just contemplating, for me it was the idea of the unknown of the future, events could happen one way or the other, and, I have the tendency to dwell on something and think, oh no, the worst case scenario, this is what I have to prepare for, but to just not just forget about, let go of the future regardless of the outcome and enjoy the present.
Here,
the experience of the journey, like you said. And we don't, I don't know what might happen on that journey, but right now everything is
okay.
Is going well.
Right. Yeah. And that's so, all we have is right now.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. The going well, that's inside of us.
Mm-hmm.
Because, and that's all we have, is to be the change we want to see in the world. Like, I think Gandhi is the person who said that, or a couple other people.
Yeah.
And there's nothing else we have control over. You go right outside your body, and there's all sorts of chaos.
Right.
And sometimes, it's like... remaining positive is like a full-time job. It's like,
right.
So like, you read the papers and you think the amazing amount of things, there's always people being killed by some ridiculous action in four or five different countries and several states in our country.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have natural disasters and we don't react well to them, and then government gets blamed. And they're not always to blame in natural disasters, even if they don't always prepare. How do you prepare for these things?
Yeah.
There was a lot of, I think government was very slow about Katrina. I don't think they cared as much as they could have, considering who was suffering. But at the same time, how do you prepare for that?
Right.
It's, we're a very imperfect species. We sometimes criticize too much.
It's kind of why we come here to do what we're doing now.
Yeah,
it's the only way we can prepare.
Everything I do in all cultures, like this culture, and when I do folk music or write songs or poems, it's all coming from here, trying to affect the change I want to see by being it.
Right.
And I do an imperfect job, but I keep doing it.
And when you say coming from here, Percy, because people listening can't hear you, what is it you're...
Coming from inside, coming from my heart.
From your heart.
My mind, heart, and gut. It's a combination.
Mm-hmm.
And they all cooperate in the right way, then you have a good work or a good feeling.
Yes.
And if one of them is out of kilter, then things get a little dicey. So
you said earlier that there's so much chaos outside of us, and I was going to add that it always isn't outside of us. Sometimes we have plenty of chaos inside of us that.
But we have more control.
We can
still that chaos to some extent or all extent, depending on the situation.
Yeah.
So, I try to let go of outcomes. And when I see people get angry at the world, it's their anger.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
People talk about, well, wouldn't you be angry if that was happening to you? And maybe I would be, but the thing is, there have been people under all conditions who have somehow maintained equilibrium. And there have been people under even the best conditions who cannot maintain equilibrium.
Yeah.
There is under the worst conditions. This is under the worst conditions. Some people maintain equilibrium. Sometimes maybe they maintain too much, but at the same time, that's when you need it the most. You need to keep. You have to keep your sanity.
Right.
You have to. There's this old blues saying: if you lose your money, don't lose your mind. That would go for a lot of things. You must keep your sanity even under the worst conditions. And I used to wonder about African Americans back in the old days when they were called Negroes, long time ago,
mm-hmm.
and how so many of them were so happy all the time. So many of them just had a very relaxed attitude about life. It's because even though they, back in the 60s here,
right, yeah.
very much oppressed, very much, they understood, or at least many of them understood, that you still have to keep your sanity and that enjoying yourself under adverse circumstances is a basic rule of adult life. It's a way of keeping sanity. And
it was up to them internally to do that.
Yeah. And that's, there's always been a lot of Jewish humorists, Jewish comics, stand-up comics and actor comics, and coming from that that particular oppressed people, and there've always been a lot. So people learn to live with that oppression in a good way, not necessarily in a bad way, but in a good way. I'm doing a lot of talking for a first timer, so I should
But actually that segues really well into... into Sutra 1.5, the Vutaya Panchataya Klista Aklista. The movements of consciousness are fivefold. They may be cognizable or non-cognizable, painful or non-painful. Give me Shearer.
Shearer's is...
No, five, yeah.
There are five types of mental activity. They may or may not cause suffering.
Mm-hmm. And... Satchidananda does, there are five kinds of mental modifications which are either painless or painful.
And number five there?
There are five types of patterns, including both hurtful and benign.
Mm-hmm. So, and the way that you're speaking about people who are who are oppressed, they're able to still enjoy, even in a painful situation,
mm-hmm.
enjoy themselves.
Yeah.
You know? And that's because they're able to see the truth in their situation and to know that, even though other people may think that, this is, they have their idea of me and they oppress me because of some generalization, that's not what I'm about.
Mm-hmm.
And I refuse to allow that to affect me, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that's one way of taking this.
Wouldn't it be rather like maintaining your own personal integrity in a way?
Yes.
I mean, it is, I know me.
Mm-hmm. That's right. Yes, exactly.
Exactly. That is where I'm going to come from.
Right. No matter what anyone else thinks about me.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And it's also, I guess, probably a way to learn about oneself, too. If someone... I know when I was in high school, I was always like the new kid in school, and I went to school in the Deep South for like a couple of semesters of high school, and I also went to school in Germany, but for a little while I was in the Deep South, and I was the new kid in town, and you can't get in.
Mm-hmm.
You just can't, right?
You're not one of them.
You're not one of them.
Yeah.
And so I was singled out, really, to be pretty much ostracized and, made an example of or whatever. And I had to search myself through that experience and say, is that really who I am? I learned a lot about myself through that
mm-hmm.
experience. And it strengthened me in a lot of ways, I have to say.
But you had to be quiet and look inside.
I did.
You had to make that decision to be with yourself in the moment, even though the moment was painful.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Exactly. And I grew from mm-hmm. it. I grew quite a bit out of it. Does anybody else have any experiences with anything like that? As far as...
Mine would be like yours. I was kind of always the new kid. Mm-hmm. And you do. You learn, because you're never one of them. It's always, humans are us and them. You know, we're tribal. Us and them. So if you're not one of them, then you're always an outsider, and it's, where do you fit? What are my values? What does have meaning? And so I think you do start learning at a young age, what do I think and feel if I'm not just parroting all the other people around me?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And we're still on the journey.
That's right. That's right. So that's one aspect of this. And we spoke last time about the analogies of the pleasures of the table, for instance, you know, can turn into the pain of the scale.
Later
on, that type of thing. Or the pain of having to do hard work can turn into the pleasures of the benefits that you reap
paycheck.
Of the paycheck, right, yeah. So pleasure and pain are very much closely related. We know that consciousness, or the citta, is analogous to a wheel whose motion of spinning is caused by our tendencies to go to the extremes of pleasure or pain,
mm-hmm.
you know, which are the spokes of that wheel. And once we can find that middle ground, that's when we come to that sattva, that tranquility, that state of stillness.
Equilibrium.
And quiet equilibrium, the equilibrium that Bruce was speaking of.
Yeah.
Absolutely, finding that middle ground. Absolutely. Do you have anything you'd like to add with this?
Not at the present time. I've been spacing just for the last few seconds for
some
reason.
That's okay. That's fine. Absolutely. You're totally allowed to space. Not a problem. Not a problem. So, and you know, I mean, here's also a good time for me to maybe also bring in the fact that, I don't really talk a lot about my past. I don't broadcast it so much, but I guess we're broadcasting, so. I will have to begin to speak of it because I am hopefully planning to help people who have been through the same things as I have, and maybe help them to avoid some of the pain that I've experienced. But I know in my younger days, I made a lot of bad choices, you know, and some of those choices were in order to indulge my ego and to indulge my pleasure senses,
your
what
desires.
I thought was pleasure senses, yeah. You know, I mean, I dabbled in drugs, I did this, I did more than dabble, you know. And I did things that seemed pleasurable at the time, but eventually ended up causing me a lot of pain, And, but now, again, I've gone through that pain, and I'm finding so much material out of it that I can reach back and be able to pull out of it to help other people. So I have to turn it around again. You know what I mean? I go from pain or from pleasure to pain, and now keep turning it back into pleasure.
You're coming up again.
I'm coming up again, right, exactly. And I think it's up to us and how we're going to use those experiences that we have.
Mm-hmm.
How we choose.
Everybody has a past.
Yeah, everybody has a past.
Everybody has a past. Everybody has pain.
Right.
Everybody sitting here, everybody listening, everybody.
Right.
And each person's journey has to come from what is in them.
That's right.
And how you choose to use
the experiences.
The experiences.
Yeah, right.
You know, I understand you, Zana, saying that you have made really a conscious choice to use your pain to step up on, to step up out of, to grow, to help. Mm-hmm. And that's excellent. You know, we all need to use what we've got.
And I think the only thing that makes the pain worthwhile is to use that experience to reach out and help pull others out of that.
It's like once something has happened to you, good or bad or in between, that's the lesson.
You can't unhappen it.
Well, not only can you not unhappen it, but you can then make it a little better by passing it on in a good way.
Yeah, utilize it. Mm-hmm.
You know, if you happen to take a dead end that wasn't marked a dead end and ran into something, you can then tell somebody, hey, there's a dead end there.
Don't go that way.
I mean, just, you know, in whatever. Now, and they don't always take your advice. Like many people who have given up hard drugs and are now drug counselors tell people you shouldn't do this, and they go and do it anyway. But they make you make the effort, you put it out, mm-hmm. and then you have to let go because you
don't have
any control over
it. Right.
And a lot of the pain in this world comes from people who try to push their own beliefs and won't let go. And they are tied up in knots over this and get angry because people aren't doing it the right way, which happens to be their way.
Right.
And the other people suffer because they're oppressed by these people, mm-hmm. who seem to think that if everybody was just controlled completely through a big system where you push a button and everybody does certain things, then the world would be all right. You know.
Right. But everybody's different, and everybody's process is different.
Absolutely. We're all the same and all different. Until we can get our minds around that, it's really going to be difficult, because everybody needs the same things for the most part, mm-hmm. with a few exceptions, but basically we do. And yet, everybody is different in some way. From even the people you're most alike in the whole world, there's still some difference.
That's right.
And that's a good thing.
Yeah. The people you most love, you still have disagreements with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Children, parents, lovers,
yeah.
best friends, absolutely.
Oh boy.
I mean,
sometimes those are the people you have the most differences with because you have the most invested in them.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And
with
you're around them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Right, yeah, absolutely.
Are we going to get to number six here? Or?
Yes, we are. So number six names the five modifications of the fluctuations of the mind. Sutra 1.6, Pramana Viparyaya Vikalpa Nidra Smritaya. They are caused by correct knowledge, illusion, delusion, sleep, and memory.
Sure. These are the five. Understanding, misunderstanding, imagination, sleep, and memory.
And Satchidananda says, they are right knowledge, misconception, verbal delusion, sleep, and memory.
And Patanjali says the same thing in his own words, right perception, misperception, conceptualization, deep sleep, and remembering.
And that's actually a translation by, what's his name?
Chip Hartrand.
Yes. So do any one or two of these jump out at anybody in particular? We're going to go through each one of these in our next segment more specifically. But does anyone have any one or two that specifically might...
That might what?
Jump out at you, like that
as?
Well,
as
none jump out,
pertinent.
But I noticed that it's easy to understand right perception and misperception, because I've had both right and misperception. And conceptualization, well, I have concepts of things and then change. The deep sleep and remembering thing is a little more difficult because they're more esoteric.
Right.
The deep sleep one, of course, is very esoteric. And remembering, well, I have a pretty good memory, but I don't know that that's, I don't think that's exactly what they mean here.
Mm-hmm.
Right, and our memories get colored over time.
Mm-hmm.
So
definitely.
Yeah.
Definitely. Yeah, I think memory is probably one of the more unreliable ones if it's not perfect memory. And perfect memory is very rare. Let's put it that way. I'll put it that way. Rare.
So these are the five types of mental activity that may or may not cause suffering.
Mm-hmm.
And out of the five, and all of these interpretations seem to state them pretty much similarly, in my looking at them, I think each one of them can definitely cause you some suffering. And each one of you, them...
can definitely be beneficial.
Yeah, so this will be interesting to...
to go through each one of
you. To think on these.
Yeah. So, yeah, according to Patanjali, these fluctuations may either disturb us as seekers or aid us on our path to emancipation. Ooh. So why do you think this is? Why would they either disturb us or aid us? Like you were just saying. What do you think?
Well, anything is capable of disturbing us depending on the situation. Even if you have a right perception, the right perception might be what you perceive might not be healthy.
Right, like mom did something awful. You know, let's say, killed your cat. You know what I mean?
Even if it's by accident.
And that's correct, what happened.
Yeah.
You know, and that's not good.
If you find out that a loved one or a friend or somebody actually has this dark side you didn't know about
right.
and did something terrible, that you have a right perception to perceive it, and it's disturbing. Oh, yeah. Of course, wrong perception obviously can be disturbing because that can hurt you.
How can that be helpful?
But sometimes wrong perception is what keeps us sane.
We can. It can be helpful because we can correct a wrong perception. Mm-hmm. Once we realize it's wrong, we can make a correction.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, I also like what Suzanne said as well. About.
I mean, sometimes wrong perception is what keeps us from feeling more pain.
But isn't that delusional?
Well,
isn't that
but
the delusion?
But like, is that wrong? Is that bad? Is that
is that
always
that
a negative?
I don't know if that would be. Like,
that's why I think this
like
is
we're trying to get to the truth and be okay with whatever is the truth, regardless of rather than deceiving ourselves in order to be happy.
But then it's like, then we can get into the discussion of what is truth and who's truth and how are you going to quantify truth and what are the parameters around truth.
Yeah. Well, the non-misconception, like the truth, the reality, I guess.
I think it has to be our truth. I think it has to...
I don't know. I think there is only one truth, one basic truth, and that is without the self.
The difficulty.
Yeah,
that there is only one truth, and that's without the ego. Yeah.
But to delude ourselves of the reality.
The idea of the one true thing kind of bothers me.
Mm-hmm. Does it?
It has that kind of that fundamentalist Christian thing about there's one way, the Billy Graham thing that I very much disdain. I understand what one truth means. I mean, it's true that there's one truth that everything that is born has to die. Mm-hmm. That there's a truth that the sun is up there and shines now and then. I mean, but
as far as spiritually.
Yeah, I'm a little one. It's just a little bit unsettling. If each person has their own truth, then there's a good many truths. Mm-hmm. And each person has their own truth. So it's not easily ascertained about stuff like that. It's
it's not
absolutely
right. Yeah,
and that's the journey I think that we're all making here, is to find the truth.
But I think
whether it be a common truth or whether it be one that we all agree upon.
But I think in order for it to be truth, even for us as individuals, we have to truly believe it and not be deceiving ourselves with a misconception in order to be, rose-colored glasses, avoiding, which I think is the misconception. That's my, is my feeling.
That makes sense.
Kind of facing the pain and the joy.
Sometimes I think it's hard to know if it's a misconception. Sometimes it's just time will lead you at, that was wrong thinking back then.
That's true.
But at the time, that is absolutely your truth and your perception.
Until you come across
evidence
otherwise.
until something else, until we either grow inside or we have an experience that somehow gives us more information or more. That's why this journey, in my mind, is never ending. For me, I don't see it going, I've reached the aha moment, you know, because I change, the world changes, my interactions with people change.
Well, right, so like, yeah, our truths may become something different. So yeah, by saying there's one truth is saying that we can't change.
That's a good way to put it, Deborah, actually. I like that.
I like that too.
Yeah, it's interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I agree. I rankle a bit with that one truth. For me, it's my own personal, and for me, maybe I have my own truth, but it doesn't have to be everybody else's truth.
Right. No, that's a really good way to look at it.
So I think it's using that power of discrimination that we have, that the Bodhi in our.
And it might all be one truth, and we just see it differently from our own eyes.
Right.
It's the blind man and the elephant.
Yes.
Once again.
I mean, you know.
Once again.
Well, and if you think about it in just different languages, you know, everything sounds completely different.
Right.
The same words.
We have 4 books translating each the same line, and they all have a slightly different
interpretation.
A slightly different flavor to them.
Nuance to it, yeah.
Exactly, right. And nuance, that's the word I was looking for.
I was going to ask you if I was going to get a copy, which translation to get, but it doesn't look like
everyone I've seen has a good, really good insight.
What he wrote is what he wrote.
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, if it's an honest interpretation, even if it differs, it would still be true to the heart of it.
What I did to start this series of learning from the books is I went to the library and just went down and checked off a whole list of all of them. These, those, and it's like, huh, and then started just looking. Well, that's a little bit different, and just tried to find something that spoke to me, that was easier for me to understand, that was more accessible to me at the moment. And later on it might be a different book, but right now, you know, I didn't know where to start, so I just jumped in. And because some of them get pretty deep and heavy, and it wasn't quite where I was at the moment.
Yeah, that one's really clear. I like that one.
Schaefer's, yeah, I do too.
Shearer's,
excuse me.
So to get back to what we were talking about, one of the things that struck me in our last discussion was that we were talking about discrimination and we were talking about labeling. Okay, so labeling or judgment, making judgments. So when we use our Bodhi or our intelligence to choose between what's beneficial and what we also and what is not beneficial, we also run the risk of labeling those things or actions. So what is the difference between discrimination and judgment?
That's a hard one.
Yeah. But it's very important. It's very important.
You know, discrimination is a perfectly good word that's hit upon hard times. Mm-hmm. Because it's usually used in my lifetime,
right.
Racial discrimination,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. Religious discrimination,
right.
Gender discrimination, but the thing is,
in a negative way,
mm-hmm. Without discrimination, nobody's life would ever have make any sense,
right.
Because you have to discriminate between the right and wrong people to deal with for you.
Mm-hmm.
If someone is trying to skin you, as opposed to someone who might be honest, you have to be able to discern your gift of discernment,
right.
And just the idea of discriminating in what you put into your body or what you. Or what make the things that make you happy feeling, what endeavors would make you happy or not. So discrimination is essential, and we do it every day, and we just have to understand that whether it's healthy discrimination or unhealthy.
Mm-hmm.
And judgment is the idea of, and this is a tough one, judgment, of course, is the idea of of thinking that somebody is wrong because they disagree, which is different from being wrong because there's something about patently offensive. It's the idea, potentially harmful. If your belief system is such that you can't tolerate disagreement, you're constantly judging. You're bringing out the judge and dismissing that other person. However, if somebody is taking liberties with a child, then that would be, I would make what I would call an essential judgment, a proper judgment, and say, well, let's call the police and have this person mm-hmm. arrested. Mm-hmm. And so the judgment thing, you can't, it's...
I think judgment from what you're saying and the thinking on it is a more finite, it's a more absolute. Discernment is more... You know, I can go this way, but I kind of choose this way. But a judgment is, it's like right, wrong.
Yeah.
You know,
there
isn't so much gray area in between.
Unless there is a definite thing that is especially excellent or especially horrible, then I try to relax my judgments. I mean, it's constantly people are all talking about this person has horrible taste or whatever. Such a personal thing. That's, you know, let's relax, Joe's. But if, you know, there are certain things, a lot of laws I consider are worthless laws that beg to be broken. But we don't, in society, you know, almost every society has laws against murder, mm-hmm. sexual assault, armed robbery, menacing, you know, these various, the biggies. So those laws are there for a reason. And so to me it's just a matter of keeping the laws that matter and letting about two-thirds of them go.
Do you have a thought?
I think...
What the difference is?
The difference for me between discernment and judgment. Judgment for me deserves my equanimity. When I make judgments, I am putting labels on something, and I am, like you said, giving it a finite...
It's more an absolute.
Yeah, it's an absolute. Putting an absolute on it. Absolutely. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Right, you judge that.
Discernment for me is more using that faculty of awareness, that intelligence comes in, and it's just knowing... It's making the choice between what is beneficial and what is non-beneficial, you know, rather than placing a label on something simply because it offends me. Exactly.
Yeah.
So Iyengar says, what I am describing here is a journey from a chattering brain to a clean instinct to reach the clarity of intuition. When you start yoga, you probably are living in your mind and your emotions, a never-ending internet chat room. You read books and articles on what best to eat and how to exercise, reading material any wild animal would scorn. But you do not know how to live, only what you desire. Instinct is dulled. With asana and pranayama practice, first we move outward from mind and cleanse the body, senses, and organs. Instinct is revitalized. The newly awoken intelligence of the body moves in and tells you automatically what food is good for you, when and how much to eat, when and how to exercise, and when to rest or sleep. People forget that in our quest for the soul, we first reclaim the pristine joys of the animal kingdom, health and instinct, vibrant and alive. At the same time, we are transforming instinct into intuition. Intelligence cuts its teeth on analysis and synthesis, reason and deduction. It becomes muscular, and gradually the higher intelligence of reason begins to dawn, like the light in the sky before sunrise. Instinct is the unconscious intelligence, the cell surfacing. Intuition is superconscious, knowing in which you know where, in which you know before you know how you know. That's it. So basically...
Intuition.
Discernment is using your intuition.
Mm-hmm.
Judgment is using your past experience, is using your mind, is using that mm-hmm. logic,
yeah.
Yeah, that analysis. Yeah. So, does that make sense?
Yeah.
Does that make sense? All right. So, spiritual intelligence, which is true wisdom, dawns only when discrimination ends. Wisdom does not function in duality. It perceives only in only oneness. It does not discard the wrong. It feels only the right. And that's yin gar again.
It does not discard
the
wrong.
It feels only the right.
So everything coexists.
Everything coexists. So that's going to conclude the first half of our discussion today. Namaste and thank you for all of your wonderful and inspiring contributions.
Please check our website, www.wayoftheyogi.com, for the link to this podcast. It is currently still under construction, but we hope to have it fully functioning very soon.
And I do have a promise for some help with that. So we're going to pause for a break now, and when we return, we will pick up with the next 5 sutras of the Samadhipada.
Yay!